Emerging markets are typically associated with a potential for strong growth, but over the past decade, a number of emerging markets equity income funds have also launched. These include JP Morgan Global Emerging Markets Income Trust, which is managed by today's guest, Omer Negyel. Omer, how does the level of income from emerging markets compare to that of Asian equity income, another non-traditional but promising source of dividends? And what are the prospects for emerging markets equity income in the years ahead?
There's actually a decent overlap between the two. So Asia is obviously a subset of emerging markets. So from an emerging market point of view, we can invest in emerging Asia, but also take advantage of the positive income opportunities in places like Latin America, Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. So I would think of it as a very broad approach to clearly the emerging markets universe.
Are any particular emerging markets, countries or sectors good sources of dividends?
Yes, I think when we look across emerging markets, so I mean, firstly, I'd say, broadly speaking, I'd say there's been a positive dividend culture that's developed. So we can think about a payout ratio on average of about 35% for the asset class, and that's been remarkably stable for many, many years, which is a good starting point. But when we look at the different markets, it's pretty clear to me that when we're looking for good income opportunities, we can think about certain markets which do lend themselves to dividends more than others. So I could think of a few examples: Brazil, South Africa, parts of the Middle East, Taiwan, and increasingly China. These are all areas where there are, I think, better dividend opportunities than the average emerging market. And there's all sorts of different reasons for that. From legal ones, you know, in Brazil, you have to pay at least 25% of your earnings as dividends. So that's quite a nice starting point. Or markets like South Africa or Taiwan, where it's much more about the management teams. So we see high quality management teams that want to pay dividends. Or parts of the Middle East, where it's just a demand from investors. Investors there, local investors there, like dividends.
You mentioned China, and according to your last fact sheet, you actually have over a quarter of your assets in China. Now, some of my listeners may have associated this equity market more with growth than income. So why are income opportunities good in China?
I do think that partly that's a perception issue. And we can probably broaden that out to a lot of emerging markets, that emerging markets has historically been perceived as much more of a pure growth play. But certainly over the last 10 years or so, it has become also an asset class that's very appropriate for income. And I think China's a great example there, where, again, we see pretty consistent levels of dividend payouts from companies. So that makes it a good area for us to be looking at. I think the other positive thing to say here is that China's basically a very large, broad market. So yes, there are going to be parts of the Chinese market that aren't appropriate for us. And if they're not appropriate, we won't invest in them. But equally, there's lots of other areas where we can find just the right kinds of companies for dividends and growth potential in those dividends over the coming years.
Okay, now, like you said, China is very large and broad, and not only does it encompass many sectors, it actually encompasses many different types of shares. So in terms of the equity income you're getting, are you looking more at domestic listed A shares, or perhaps are you looking to Hong Kong shares or some of the other many classes of shares that you find on various Chinese markets?
We take quite a diversified approach. Historically, we had invested mainly in Chinese companies listed in Hong Kong, but over the last few years, we've been increasingly taking advantage of the opening up of the A share markets via the Connect scheme through Hong Kong. So that means we can now invest in companies listed in Shanghai and Shenzhen. And for me, that's a great opportunity to look for what I think are very exciting income opportunities in China. The good thing about the Chinese A-share market is, again, it's the breadth and depth of stocks there. So it's just easier for us to find the kinds of companies that we're looking for, companies that have good returns, good cash flows, and very crucially, positive dividend policies.
What sort of sectors and areas of industry are you finding particularly good opportunities?
Well, two broad areas I'd identify in China today are the consumer space, and that is especially within the Chinese A-shares, and also financials. And I'd highlight insurance as an area that's very interesting. And really what links a lot of these opportunities are, I would describe them as domestic consumption upgrade stories. So they're areas where consumers are spending more. There tends to be a penetration story, and we can find good companies with decent market positions and good management teams that can take advantage of that.
Okay, and what would be some examples of portfolio holdings in these areas?
Sure. Let's say within the consumer space, and these are A-share listings, I'd mention two names. So one of them is Meidi, which is a Chinese white goods manufacturer. So it makes washing machines, air cons, dishwashers, all the kinds of home appliances that a Chinese consumer wants. And it's very well positioned because it's one of three large domestic companies in China in this area. If you're a Chinese consumer, you don't buy foreign brands here. You buy a domestic brand. And these domestic brands are well positioned in terms of generating good profits from the area. And we see the Chinese consumer as an upgrade potential for all these products. So it's a company where we think there's a long runway for growth in the sector. It's a company that generates high returns on capital, which is always something that we're very interested in. And a company that generates cash and, very importantly, has a good track record of paying out that cash or some of that cash in terms of dividends to shareholders. So we look at around about a 40% dividend payout ratio. And so that to me is exactly the kind of stock that we want to be buying for the income trust, because it's a stock around about a 3% yield today, but where there's a good prospect for that dividend to grow over time.
Because of your high allocation to China, have US-China trade tensions been detrimental to the trust's returns?
I think it's fair to say that China-US trade tensions have affected all of emerging markets. And certainly we saw that last year, especially in the second half of 2018, when there was a downturn in emerging markets overall, and the trust didn't completely escape that. Overall, the kinds of companies that we invest in tend to be relatively more stable, more cash flow generative. That cushion of yield is clearly helpful in weaker environments, and we saw that last year. But from an absolute basis, clearly, yes, it was a more challenging environment. I think the other thing to say here, though, is also that does throw up a lot of interesting opportunities for us. So although clearly from a narrative point of view, China looked pretty difficult last year, it was actually a time when we added a significant amount to our Chinese exposure through especially the second half of 2018, buying some of those Chinese A shares, which I mentioned earlier, or some of the Chinese financials, which again looked pretty interesting. And really, the way I would describe it is these are good companies that we had identified previously. How we would describe them as quality companies and clearly producing good dividends. We still see those dividends being generated through what is a volatile time, and those stocks got cheaper. So I was very happy to take advantage of that valuation opportunity and add to our holdings in China during that period.
Okay, and have you been able to do any of that this year at all?
After the weakness in the second half of 2018, what we've actually seen in the first half of 2019 has been a bounce back in emerging markets overall. So I think markets have begun to anticipate some kind of resolution to these trade tensions. And obviously, a lot can still happen. We need to see what comes through, but that seems to be what markets are anticipating. But that rise in markets this year means that actually there's been, in some ways, fewer of these valuation opportunities. So we've actually changed the portfolio relatively little. It's been a relatively stable portfolio this year. The one area we have seen opportunities is in the semiconductors area, particularly in Taiwan. That's been an area that we have been adding to during the year. Again, just topping up on existing positions in high-quality dividend-paying companies.
What would be an example of one of those?
So I'd highlight Taiwan Semiconductor. That's one of our largest positions in the portfolio. A premium company, so a really good company in terms of its dominance in its own semiconductor industry. A company that's had a very, very good history of generating high returns on capital, which is always something that we're very interested in. And a company where the dividend has become increasingly important. So clearly we like the fact that we think the profitability outlook for this company is very good, despite the near-term volatility. What we also really like is that earlier on in the year, the management team committed to a much more steady dividend outlook going forwards in terms of absolute dividend per share. And that to us was very supportive for the investment case. So that's the kind of company I'm very happy to be adding to in difficult times.
You mentioned things looking a bit better this year, but I think many people would consider emerging markets just generally to be a risky area. So what would you say are the main risks that emerging markets generally face at the moment? And to what, if any extent, do they affect your particular portfolio holdings?
I think it's always right to highlight that emerging markets is a riskier area in terms of equities. I think there are three risks that I'd identify at the moment. One of them you've clearly highlighted, which is the trade tensions. And that doesn't just apply to China. We've seen issues around Mexico as well, for example. And these issues, as they come and go, do impact both corporate confidence in terms of investment opportunities or capital expenditure from those companies. And it does also impact consumer confidence. So I think that those kinds of issues arising from the trade tensions are one risk we need to monitor. Related to that is the trajectory of the Chinese economy, not just because China is very important on its own, but because it really is the engine of growth for the rest of emerging markets. So that's something that we want to continue to monitor in terms of a risk. And I think the third risk I would always talk about is currencies. So we need to be very aware that we are investing in stocks that are listed and obviously listed in multiple different markets, generating earnings and generating dividends from different currencies, which we're translating back into sterling. And that's something that we explicitly think about, but it's also a good risk to highlight to shareholders.
Do you hedge at all?
We don't hedge. We take explicit views on the currencies of the stocks that we're investing in, and we do that on a multiple year view. We everything we do is on a 5-year time horizon. And essentially the way we think about it is, for those currencies which we would potentially want to hedge, those tend to be the ones that are prohibitively expensive to hedge. So it's just better not to be there. So we just want to focus on those opportunities where the currency risk is lower, effectively.
Now, we've been talking about emerging markets, but do you ever invest in any off-benchmark areas outside emerging markets?
The focus for this, for the trust, is emerging markets. So we want to invest in emerging market stocks. We do invest in emerging market stocks that aren't necessarily in the benchmark. So we're definitely not a benchmark-driven portfolio. And so, for example, I'd point to our active share versus the emerging markets index, where our active share is close to 90%. So clearly we're doing something that's very different from the benchmark, as it were, and that's something that I'm very comfortable with. We have a very clear focus on dividend paying stocks only. We have a very clear process in terms of identifying them. We're going to be different. I think the other thing to say is that often we are quite early investors in markets before they might become more mainstream. So Chinese A shares is a good example. We were investing in China A shares back in 2015. So very early on, when foreigners began to have access, we built up our research capability and we got invested. They've only just gone into the benchmark this year. So those are the kinds of examples. I'd add into that places like Saudi Arabia or the UAE in the Middle East.
Are these, by definition, frontier markets rather than emerging markets?
The thing to hear to highlight is that over time they've become defined as emerging markets. But as long as we have the research capability and the analysis on those stocks, and we're comfortable with liquidity around them, then we're comfortable to invest. And really, my universe of stocks, when I think about it, is ultimately it's not driven by the benchmark. It's driven by what our research coverage is, and that's something that we have. We have a lot of strength and depth in, because we have 40 analysts on the team researching 1,100 stocks across emerging markets, whether they're in the benchmark or not. So these are all emerging market and Asian stocks. And for those 1,100, some of those clearly are going to be suitable for income. And that's my pool of stocks to build the portfolio from.
What would be perhaps examples of some of these less mainstream holdings?
So I think historically, when I look back, places like Saudi Arabia or the UAE would have been examples. Today, probably the most sort of esoteric investment we have is one equity holding that we have in Kenya, where we hold a bank stock, and that's obviously off benchmark. But otherwise, most of our investments are in the more mainstream emerging markets today.
JP Morgan Global Emerging Markets Income Trust has increased its dividend in respect of its last financial year but for the previous 5 years, it kept it at the same level. Do you expect to be able to increase it in the current financial year and raise it in future years?
So when we look back, I think it's fair to say that the last 5 years have been a pretty challenging period for emerging markets. So I think over the very long term, emerging markets have clearly delivered dividend growth, but we've been in a period of the economic cycle where it has been difficult for emerging market companies in aggregate to grow dividends. And actually, we had a period when emerging market dividends went down during the last few years. So obviously, during that period, I think we're pretty comfortable with the fact that we've been able to hold the dividend flat and as you say, increase it in the last year. I can't really give any specific guidance around dividends for this financial year. I think clearly the aspiration in the long term is that we want to invest in companies which have, firstly, sustainability in terms of dividends, and we're also looking for companies that have the potential to grow dividends in the long term. And that's how I describe the long-term goal.
Okay. I suppose just more generally, how much importance do you place on generating an income, and how much importance do you place on capital growth as part of your total return when you're managing the trust?
Both are important. So I'm looking for a balance between income and growth for the portfolio. What I specifically don't want to do is take those 1,100 stocks that we cover, rank them by dividend yield and go and buy the top 70 or 80 stocks, because that I think the danger of that is that it leads us into yield traps, bad balance sheets, risky propositions, etc. So really we want to build a portfolio that has a good balance between the yield and growth potential. Every stock has to provide income though. So for an income portfolio, I think it's very important that every stock does have a yield and does contribute to the income of the portfolio every year.
Do you have a minimum yield level that you expect?
So the way I think about it is, you can think about the portfolio being divided into three buckets. So we have a target yield bucket, which is the largest part of the portfolio, around about 60%. So about 60% of the portfolio would be between 3% and 6% dividend yields. So those are stocks that, in our eyes, are still cheaper than the market from a yield perspective, but they have the long-term prospects of still being able to grow dividends at a decent rate. And on either side of that target yield zone, we'll have stocks that are either higher yield than that, so greater than 6%, probably with lower growth, and also some stocks which are less than 3% yield, but where we see a superior dividend growth profile. As I say, every stock has to have a yield. Today, practically the lowest yield in the portfolio is about 1.5%.
So what other attributes of a stock do you assess other than the yield before adding a potential investment to the portfolio?
There's clearly a number of different factors that we look at, and we've got a very robust research process. I think I'd identify three key areas that I'm always thinking about. Three key questions, if you like, that I'm always asking our analysts or asking companies when we meet them. And that's around, firstly, return on equity. So we want to invest in companies that are highly profitable and where we have conviction that profitability can last for a long time. The second point is around free cash flow generation. So we want to invest in companies that can generate a healthy level of free cash flow. You know, clearly you can't pay dividends sustainably without generating cash. And the third key point is dividend policy. So developing a very clear understanding of not just the ability, but the willingness of companies to pay dividends in the long term. And that last point is actually very, very important, because you've mentioned earlier that emerging markets has a lot of risks. And one of the risks in emerging markets is the companies that we invest in, that they're at a different stage. And I make almost a direct link between payout ratios, so dividend payout ratios, and governance. So in my view, by looking for companies where there's a clear view to return cash to shareholders every year, that's a pretty important signal from management in terms of the treatment of minority shareholders, their confidence in the business, and so on. And so it's a way of finding the right kinds of stocks to invest in emerging markets. So those three key points, really: return on capital, free cash flow, and dividend policy. Those are the three key areas I'm always looking at.
What could be reasons for you selling a stock out of the trust?
I generally talk about three reasons to sell a stock. The first, and in some ways simplest, is its valuation. So yield is clearly an important criteria for us. as a stock re-rates, it becomes more expensive. If the yield declines, you know, significantly, then we would look to incrementally sell that position. And that can be quite a slow process, but over time we'd sell out as the valuations increased. The second reason would simply be that we got our investment thesis wrong. So we're not going to get every decision right. I work very closely with the analysts to review all these positions. As we think that our investment thesis is changing, that is a reason for me to sell a stock. And the third, and in some ways clearest reason, but also relatively rare, is if we have a dividend payout disappointment. So we set a lot of store by dividend policy. If a company surprises us in a negative way in terms of the payout, and we can't really understand why that's happening, or we don't like the reasons for it, that is a trigger for me to sell the stock. So those are the three key reasons, really. But I think it's always important to highlight that overall, this is a relatively stable portfolio. So we take long-term views on stocks. Once we find good dividend stocks, we want to hold them to receive the dividends. So our holding period tends to be around about 5 years.
Funds which pay an attractive income, make good returns, quite often trade on a premium to net asset value. But despite the fact you've beaten MSCI Emerging Market Index over the past year and you offer a nice yield, but you're trading at a 5% discount to net asset value. How come?
Clearly the discount varies over time. I think partly it's a reflection of probably just uncertainty around the asset class. As some of the things we've discussed around trade tensions, etc., that does affect how people view the asset class itself. I mean, if we look back just a few months, the trust was trading at a premium to NAV. So clearly these things change over time. And our average discount to NAV over the last 5 years has been about just over 2.5%.
Okay, thank you, Omer. A really interesting insight into emerging markets equity income and a helpful update on JP Morgan Global Emerging Markets Income Trust. That brings us to the end of today's interview. But for more on emerging markets equity income, see the website at www.investorschronicle.co.uk. Thank you for listening.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.